Oh, y'all, come on, wasn't worship great? Oh, man. One of the things that I like to do, I don't know if anyone else likes to do it, something that I love to do, and I do almost every night, is I watch some true crime, or I listen to some true crime podcast. Anyone else like true crime? All right, a couple people, okay. And what happens, there's a couple people that I follow that have these podcasts and all that, and they always have these obscure headlines, these obscure names, and it's like, I'm like, what is this? I have to listen to it. I have to watch it. And so they always pull me in. But during the summer, I did a little bit of reading. And I read a few crazy stories. They're not true crime, but they're I was thinking about some of the headlines that I get to watch or read that kind of pull me in, and I thought I'd make some headlines from some of these crazy stories. Can I give you a few headlines real quick? Yep. Headline number one, Emperor attacked by bunnies. Emperor attacked by bunnies. Okay, number two is this, bear deservingly promoted to corporal. Bear deservingly promoted to corporal. Number three is this, a car ride, rat poison, and a nap. The story of this year's marathon. And the last one, super obscure, right? Here we go. Will Pepsi go to war? Will Pepsi go to war? Now, I suspect that some of you are trying to piece together what happened to merit this type of tailor-made headlines. Well, some of you might be trying to rationalize what's taking place. You might be thinking, like, you know what, bear? It's a nickname. It's some valiant soldier. He's incredibly strong. He's won a bunch of battles. Bear is a nickname. Some others are like, you know what? Bunny is another army. That's what happened. Bunny came in. The army of bunnies came in and they attacked the emperor. Other thoughts might be, you know what, Pastor Taylor? This is all about the Cola Pepsi Wars. I know it. It's all about the Cola Pepsi Wars. Well, I can assure you tonight, all of those are incorrect. But what has happened is that you might have leaned in just a little bit more. You're engaging a little bit differently than you were earlier. To try to figure out what exactly has taken place, you're not just present tonight, you're engaged. Let me help you out. 1807, Napoleon Bonaparte arranged to go rabbit hunting. And instead of wild rabbits, Napoleon's chief of staff rounded up several hundred to 3,000 tamed bunnies or rabbits. And so when the time came for the hunt, when they released these bunnies, instead of running for their lives, they all started jumping over the entire hunting party, including the Napoleon Bonaparte, this distinguished general had to retreat to his carriage to make a quick getaway. Next one, 1942, the Polish army encountered an orphaned bear. This orphaned bear cub they adopted, and they named him Wojtek, and he became their mascot. Now, that's not the craziest part of this. See, this bear grew up with the soldiers and became a part of their family, and when the ships went to take them to Italy, they denied the bear access because he was a mascot. So their next logical step was to enlist this bear into the army. He was then promoted to corporal because he helped move artillery shells during the Battle of Monte Cassino. After the war, Wojtek was retired from services and spent the remainder of his life at the zoo. 1904, St. Louis Olympic Marathon was wild. You ready for this? Out of 32 competitors, only 14 finished. This is largely to do with the organizers' belief that dehydration was good for the body. So there was only one water station on a hot day with dust kicking up in a nearly 25-mile race. First place hitched a ride in a car to the finish line. Second place took rat poison as a performance enhancer, and he was carried across the finish line. And fourth place slept off stomach cramps and finished the race. In 1989, the initial agreement between Pepsi, and the Soviet Union had expired, and the currency of the Soviets would no longer be accepted by Pepsi, so they did a trade. 17 submarines and several other large vessels in exchange for $3 billion worth of Pepsi. Although they sold those things pretty quickly, Pepsi, for a period of time, had more military might than all but five countries in the world. Those stories, crazy. And reading some of these stories, I feel like I had a little more questions. Like, first off, how did you tame a bear? And what made the Soviet Union jump to military-grade vessels? Like, what happened to gold and silver? But as I was working through these stories, I began to, two other headlines came to mind. Here's the other two. You ready? First one was Slave Prince Negotiates Freedom. The Slave Prince Negotiates Freedom. And then the next one is that The Apprentice Takes a Country to New Territory. You might be asking, you're like, you know what, Pastor Taylor, what do these two headlines, how do they connect with the other ones? Well, there are some similarities, and there are a couple differences. First off, what's similar is that the backstories are absolutely insane. But the difference is that these stories, these headlines, which we're talking about Moses and Joshua from the Bible, there's some lessons that we can apply to our lives. Okay, so what happened? Well, Moses led the enslaved Israelites out of Egypt as freed people. Now, as crazy of a moment as this was, it was preceded by a unique moment between him and God. Let's hold that thought for a second. The second headline was Joshua, and he was able to successfully bring the Israelites into the land that moms and dads and grandmas and grandpas and aunties and uncles had been waiting on and had believing that God was going to give them, right? And Joshua is now bringing them into that land. And as significant of a moment as that was, it was preceded by a unique moment between him and God. So what happened? Well, for Moses, he lived in the desert and he's taking care of sheep, and for him, it wasn't uncommon for bushes to catch on fire in the desert, but this one bush, this one day, at this one moment, caught his attention. And as he began to get close to investigate why this bush is on fire but is not being consumed, he began to hear the voice of God speaking to him from within the bush. So Moses turning to the bush changed the course of history for millions of people. Moses was present. Moses was engaged. Say engaged tonight. After the Israelites were out of Egypt, Moses would then begin to meet with God on behalf of the people of Israel in the tent of meeting. And then Moses would begin to relay the information to the Israelites. But there's one thing in this whole story that I find absolutely incredible. I mean, Moses is talking to God face to face. He's leaving the tent of meeting. Then he's going to talk to the rest of the Israelites and saying, this is what God has been saying to me. Although that's amazing, I find this next part incredible. This is what happened. It says that Moses would go back to the camp, and his servant Joshua, say Joshua, the son of Nun, a young man, would not depart from the tent where God met with Moses. Don't miss this tonight. Before Joshua took the people of Israel into the promised land, before he conquered Jericho, before the people of Israel crossed the Jordan River on dry ground, before any of those things, Joshua stayed in the presence of God. Joshua was present. Joshua was engaged. Say engaged. So this summer, Central Campus, we went to Camp Hermanton for our Central Campus campout, and it was so much fun. But what happened is that one night at about midnight, a Pearson meteor shower took place. Now, I was well asleep when this happened, but the next morning I was hosting the chapel, and so when people came in, I began to ask, I said, hey, who here got to see the meteor shower? And we had a few people who got to raise up their hands, and I was actually genuinely excited for them, and I didn't think much about it after. Then later on that day, I'm driving with my wife, Bree, and we're about to go on a vacation for the next couple of weeks. We're gonna take our kids to the lake, stay at a cabin for a little while. And so my mind is like, this is what's happening next. And then I began to sense that I felt like the Lord wanted to begin to speak to me. You know what I heard? This is what I heard. I felt like I heard everyone was present for the meteor shower, but not everyone was engaged. I was like, huh, interesting. And then I felt like I heard this. Only the people who were engaged experienced the shower. And then I felt like I heard this. I felt like I heard many people miss their moments with me because although they are present, they aren't engaged with what I'm actually doing. See, it's possible for us to be present, but to completely miss a moment. My wife, Bree, and I, we love watching cooking shows. It's one of our favorite things to do, but sometimes we're watching a show, and I'll be sitting there on my phone, and I'll be reading, but more likely scrolling through social media, and then she'll say, what? Did you hear that? Did you see that? And I'll be like, yeah, I did. And she's like, really? And I was like, I'm sorry. No, I didn't. Like, what happened? And she won't tell me. She won't do it. And see, I was there. I was present. I was in the room. But I wasn't engaged. And because I wasn't engaged, I missed what was happening. So my lovely wife, what she'll do is she'll have me rewind the show so that I can enjoy every moment that I missed. Joshua and Moses were not only present, they were engaged. And their engagement changed the trajectory, not only of their lives, but of countless others. Now, I want to be clear for a moment tonight. I'm not just talking about the church, but it includes the church. And the church has some really good examples and illustrations for this. See, you can come to a night like this. You can come for some good food. You can come for some games. You can talk to some friends. Go home and completely miss what God was doing in the room. Could I take it a step further tonight? You can come to a night like this. You can lift your hands. You can sing a few songs and still completely miss what God is doing in the room because your focus was on you or those around you instead of the creator of the world. Listen, God wants to transform your life, but it takes more than just showing up. It takes us leaning in just a little bit more. So the question stands, how do I engage with God so that I'm prepared for a moment? Or to put it another way, how do I live so that the headline for you and for me is more than that we were present in a space, but that we were engaged? I've got a couple thoughts for you tonight, but before we get into those, I want to address a couple things. First off, God is sovereign. He can do and will do whatever he wants to when he wants to, how he wants to do it. Second thing I want to address is this, is that you could ignore absolutely everything I'm about to tell you, and for whatever reason, God could still do something amazing in your life. Why? Because God is sovereign. Third thing is that you can do absolutely everything that I'm about to say and wait your entire lifetime for God to answer a prayer and still not have your prayer answered. Why? Because God is sovereign, but I can tell you this, and this connects to number three, you will never regret a life that is fully devoted to God. So what I'm gonna do tonight is I'm gonna work off the assumption that you want a life that is absolutely fully devoted to God. And so the question is, how do we as people live engaged so that I'm ready for a moment to happen? Well, the first one is this, that we need to believe that a moment can happen. In 1989, the World Congress on Evangelism, they heard from a Chinese prisoner who was imprisoned because of his faith. He worked waist deep, day after day, in human filth, and he sang this song consistently while he was working. Some of you might know it. It says, the lyrics are this. It says, I come to the garden alone while the dew is still on the roses, and the voice I hear falling on my ears. The Son of God discloses, and he walks with me, and he talks with me, and he tells me I am his own, and the joy we share as we tarry there, none has ever known. And when the guards began to realize that he's singing this song and he's working in all this filth and that they couldn't break this man's spirit or the brightness of his song, they released him to tell his story. And I wonder if that prisoner believed that even in the prison that he was in, that a moment could happen. See, I think that sometimes we can be so overwhelmed with the situations that we are in or the situations of those that are around us that it can seem like it's almost impossible for God to begin to move in our lives. And we begin to question, like, how can I believe that God can do something when, let's say, my brother might be in the hospital right now or my parents are fighting so much and it gets worse and worse and it seems like my family is being torn apart. Like, how can I believe for a moment when I've been preparing myself and getting ready to be accepted into this program and I just found out that I got denied and my entire life trajectory just crumbled before me? And I mean, we can list so many different scenarios that we might be facing, but the truth is that some of these situations are the moments that you're hoping that God would intervene on, but the fact that they exist make it difficult to believe that God can transform your situation. That's you tonight. Really quickly, I just want you to lean in just a little bit more. Prophet Isaiah is talking, and this is what he writes. He says, "Do you not know, have you not heard, that the everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, does not become weary or tired, and his understanding is inscrutable?" Don't miss this tonight. He's saying that God, who created absolutely everything, does not get fatigued, which means that when you approach God with your concerns and your needs, he's not like, "Oh man, I wish I can help you, but I just spent all day helping out John." Right, and so if you just talk to Peter over here, he helps me out with my calendar. I think I could fit you in about 27 and a half years. No, what God is saying, what's being said here is that God has the ability to help John, Jacob, James, and you at the same time. And he does not get tired or fatigued, which means that there's nothing too heavy for him as well. He can handle the load that you have. He's got the ability to give you what you need. So if you don't have the strength, you can carry on. So lean on him and God will give you the strength. If you don't have the might, go to him and he'll give you the ability. Then he switches it up and he says something a little bit different. He says, "Youth, you're gonna grow tired and weary, and vigorous men, they're gonna stumble badly." It's almost like Isaiah is coming to terms here. Right? He's like, "Young people," he's like, "yeah, it's, you're gonna lose energy." He says, "but can I tell you something tonight?" He says, "Those who wait upon the Lord," say wait tonight. Say wait tonight. "Those who wait upon the Lord, they will renew, they will gain new strength. They will mount up with wings like eagles. They will run and not get tired. They will walk and not become weary." Isaiah is saying that there's something unique that happens for people who decide that in the midst of their stuff, they're gonna wait on God. I remember the day I got married to my wife, Bree. It was a great day. I remember I got up on stage, the bridesmaids were on one side, the groomsmen were on the other, my dad was beside me, my brother was behind me. But I didn't worry about a single person that was coming to our wedding, right? I didn't worry about the time. I was focused on one thing. I was anticipating that back door opening. And when it opened, a stunning, beautiful, gorgeous bride of mine would be standing right behind it. Right? It's kind of like the runner who's getting ready, who's in their starting stance and is waiting for the official to shoot the starting gun so they can start the race. This is what the word wait means, is to have an eager anticipation that something will happen, that a moment will come. It's to not have your spirit break like the prisoner because you are anticipating a moment with God, because we serve a great God who can do great things. So we need to believe that a moment can happen. And number two is I have to prepare myself for that moment. Almost every single Saturday, my father-in-law comes to our house to pick up my son Gabe and to take him out for pancakes. Every Saturday, my son believes that my father-in-law is coming, but he's not always prepared for my father-in-law to come. He's got to take his pajamas off, put on his daytime clothes, teeth need to be brushed, face needs to be washed, hair needs to be done, and shoes need to be put on. See, we can lean in and begin to get excited about what God might do in our lives, and we can be waiting in anticipation, but we still need to prepare and get ready for that moment. And I believe that that preparation is seen a little bit, pretty clearly in Leviticus and is echoed later on in 1 Peter. And y'all, this summer I read through the entire book of Leviticus. And I'll be honest, it was a little bit of a struggle, right? It was tough to get through. 27 chapters saying do this and don't do that. And I believe it all comes to a point in chapter 19, verse 2, where the book, I believe, is summarized. And this is what it says. Speak to all the congregation of the sons of Israel and say to them, you shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy. Now, 1 Peter doesn't make it any easier than this. This is what it says. It says, you shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy. And this is, for me, is something that I grapple with so much. I mean, I make mistakes on the daily. I don't know if anyone else is like that. I make mistakes on the daily. And I mean, I believe I'm growing in my relationship with God each and every day. Yet, God has never made a mistake and has never spoken a word out of turn. And so how am I supposed to compare to him? Right? A God is holy. He's set apart. He's other than he is unique. And God says to be holy because I am holy, and that this is the baseline. This is the foundation for how God has commanded us to live. Now, that word holy simply means to be set apart. Now, I've got basketball shoes that are only to be worn on an indoor court. They are never to be worn on an outside court. They're never to be worn to go to the mall. They're never to be worn to come to church. They're never to be worn to quickly be thrown on to take out the garbage. They are different than my regular sneakers. My Curries are set apart. And this is what it means to be holy. So now the big question is this, for me tonight, is what is the opposite then of holy? What's the opposite of holy? It's not sin, it's common. See, God's command for holiness is separating what belongs to him, which is unique, it's exclusive, and what belongs to everything else, which is common. The cup in the tabernacle was not to be used for lemonade at grandma's house, right? It was to be set apart. The fire on the altar that was to be burning continually was not to be used to make s'mores. That would make it common. God is saying that these things are exclusively mine. They were holy. In Leviticus, God used the term holy 97 times, and he introduced a brand new category. See, sometimes for us, it's black or white, right or wrong, sin or holy. But when God introduces a new category, he says, I don't desire anything that is normal, common, or regular. And for the longest time, I would live my life trying to figure out if I could do certain things. Like, is this a sin or is it not? Is this in the gray area? How much gray area do I have until it actually becomes a sin? Like, how close can I possibly get to the line? Now, can I come down some of your rows a little bit tonight? Because I'm about to move the line, and I understand on a lot of people tonight, but stay with me. See, some of us are asking questions like, you know what, is smoking a sin? Is it okay for me to date who I want to? How far can I go with the person that I'm dating? Now, for a moment, let's leave the conversation of if it's a sin and ask this question, is it common? See, Leviticus adds a new category. So now the question isn't necessarily if it's a sin, but is it common? See, there are things that we can definitely do that are sins. But God has made you to be uncommon. So engaging in common activities goes against who God has created you to be. Now, I'm not saying it's necessarily a sin to date who you want to, but I could tell you tonight that common people do that. I'm not saying that cussing is a sin, but I can tell you that it's common language. I'm not saying that watching that messed up, or can I say tonight the ratchet TV show is a sin, but common people do it. But here's our problem. I think that sometimes we can idolize common things, and this is how we justify it. We say, you know what, it's for the culture. Or we're saying, you know what, I'm just trying to be for the people. And sometimes I think we can be more about culture than we are about the kingdom of God. And we've bought into the lie that you can do whatever you want. That culture tells you that your life is about pleasing you. It's about making as much money as you can. Culture says that life is making you happy, like you do you, boo-boo, right? Culture tells you that it's your body, it's your life, it's your decision. You can say what you want to, be who you want, act how you want, and you are your own owner. But can I tell you tonight that the devil is a liar? God says, I bought you with a price, and that price that you were bought with is the precious blood of Jesus Christ who bled and died so that you can have right relationship with God once again. He bought our freedom. So now that you've been set free, don't go back to those bonds of slavery. This is why Paul writes in Romans chapter 12, to present your bodies as a living and holy sacrifice that is acceptable to God, which this is your spiritual act of worship. So me presenting myself to God on a daily basis as different from the world that I live in and deciding that there are certain things that I just won't engage in with those that I just won't engage in, that the people who are around me seem to be embracing, is not just a sacrifice that is acceptable to God, but it's our service of worship. And Paul says this in the next verse. He says, and then do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind so that you can prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. Y'all, tonight, God desires you to be holy, set apart, different, other than, uncommon. Now, I've got to prepare myself to be engaged and to have these moments with God, because if I want to have an uncommon moments, then I need to live an uncommon life. It won't always be convenient, but it definitely will be fruitful. Now, some of you right now might be feeling the heaviness of what I just talked about. I want to highlight for a moment the difference between conviction and condemnation really quickly. Condemnation is not from God. If you're hearing condemnation, you'll hear things that are tied to your identity. It might sound like you are a sinner. You are a cheater. You are common. But conviction is tied to a situation, activity, a struggle. It sounds like, hey, do you remember when you cheated, when you stole, when you lied? You missed it there. I think you can do a lot better than that. If you're hearing condemnation, don't lean into it. But begin to ask what God is saying to you. If you're hearing the conviction of God, lean in tonight. Now, going back to the top of tonight, what headline do you want written about you? See, it takes us expectantly waiting and preparing ourselves for a headlining moment. There's a man by the name of Jonathan Edwards, and he sparked America's first great awakening with a sermon, Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God. But his greatest legacy might be those who he had developed. Amongst others, they include 300 pastors and missionaries, 120 university professors, 60 authors, 30 judges, 14 college presidents, 3 members of Congress, and 1 vice president of the United States of America. Y'all, that's a little crazy legacy. But his legacy is connected to his very own headlining moment. His headline would say, dedicated himself to God. See, on January the 12th of 1723, Jonathan wrote in his journal, and he revisited it this frequently. He wrote, I made a solemn dedication of myself to God, and I wrote it down. Giving up myself and all that I had to God to be for the future in no respect my own. To act as one that had no right to himself in any respect, and solemnly vow to take God for my whole portion and felicity, which is intense happiness, looking on nothing else as part of my happiness nor acting as if it were. Listen, tonight, if you lean into God, I can tell you that God will lean into you. If you don't hold out on God, God won't hold out on you. But the truth is that some of us, we want these great headlining moments, but that's not our job. That's God's job. Leaning in, being engaged, believing for these moments, preparing for these moments, what we talked about tonight can get our hearts prepared for what God could do in your life. Our job is to be engaged with every part of our being. And if we're faithful to do our job, I believe that God will do his. So let me ask you tonight, what does it look like for you to be fully engaged so that you're prepared for when a moment does come? What headline do you want written about you? Maybe you need to ask God to bring some excitement and expectancy into this season of waiting that you're in. Perhaps you've been living an incredibly common life. And if you were compared to someone who came into the church who never once stepped foot in the church before, there might be no difference. There might be a little bit of cleaning up for you to do right in here, of realigning yourself to what God has called you to do. So what's going to happen is the worship team is going to lead us, but I want to encourage you to spend some time around this tonight. I'm going to pray. If you need to, spend some time again just reflecting and taking a moment with God. So Jesus, I thank you for each person. Holy Spirit, I just ask that you would convict in areas that we need to be convicted. And for some of us who've been just waiting, and it just seems like an answer to our prayers might not be coming anytime soon, that you would show us what it's like for us to be expectantly waiting, anticipating something. And that for all of us, that you begin to do a work in our hearts so we can be the people that you've called us to be a bright light in this dark, this broken, this hurting world. In your amazing name, amen.